to the Huntley Baptist Church podcast. We hope that this message can be an encouragement to you today. Please feel free to contact us at huntleybaptist@extra.co.nz or visit us at huntleybaptist.com.
What have I said? You are light. You are light. You might look at yourself and be a bit upset. You might say, you don't even know me, Jeremy. You know, I have dirty thoughts. My car warrant's overdue by 3 weeks. And my power bills hasn't been paid. I drink too much coffee. I yell at my kids. And I read the New Idea magazine. You might say that. Which, by the... Have you ever seen that magazine? That's not a new idea. It's called Gossip. So you might look at yourself and say, flaws. You know, I'm light. I don't think so. Or you might look at me and say, Jeremy, are you some kind of crazy New Age guru? You know, saying that we're the light, that doesn't sound right. That's not our belief. That's a heresy, isn't it? In which case, you know what I'd say, don't you? I would say, oh, well, don't blame me. Paul said this in the Bible. Paul said this in the Bible. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. And that's from Ephesians chapter 5. And then if you're really bold, you might say, well, I guess Paul was a bit of a crazy New Age guru too. After all, Paul never actually met Jesus, did he? And if we asked Paul, he'd say, well, actually, yes, I did meet Jesus, and I spent plenty of time with the other disciples, and I know what Jesus said, and it's recorded in Matthew chapter 5. It says this, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Instead, they set it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You are the light of the world, and you must be seen. Let's unpack that word, you. Was Jesus talking to the early church, filled with holy boldness, transformed as they went out and changed the whole world? No, Jesus wasn't talking to the early church. In fact, he was saying this well before the church was really first formed properly. He was talking to flawed disciples, people with faults, people who were full of weaknesses, and they often didn't get things right. And he said, you are the light of the world. So I guess this was the 12 disciples, right? No. In Matthew 4, it says this. The large crowds that followed him came from Galilee, the Decapolis, which was the 10 cities across the sea, Jerusalem, Judea, and beyond the Jordan. Multitudes, masses of people, all sorts. Poor, uneducated people, simple people, helpless people, children. Probably some rich and important people too. Stable families, broken families, good people and bad. People like us. But they'd come to Jesus. That picture's not quite accurate, but it gives you a bit of an idea about what it must have been like. I noticed the man in the front's wearing glasses. I also noticed Jesus isn't sitting down, and we know he did. You are the light of the world. Does Jesus mean you as an individual? Does Jesus mean, Luana, you are the light of the world? Jack, you are the light of the world? Valerie, you are the light of the world? Not exactly. Not exactly. Because the word Jesus uses for you doesn't actually translate exactly into modern English. It's a word that's disappeared. It used to be in English, and the older translations of the Bible would say, ye are the light of the world. And this word ye, do you know what it means? It means you collectively. It doesn't mean you as an individual. Now, the word's dropped out of use, and we've even forgotten what it means, but it's much clearer if we look at it in the Māori language, in the Māori translation of the Bible, called koutou, te whakamārama o te ao. Most people know what koutou means. It means all of you. That's what it means, isn't it? If I say tēnā koutou, it means hello to all of you. What would I say if it was just one? I'd say tēnā koe, wouldn't I? And this does not say ko koe te whakamārama o te ao. It does not say that. It says ko koutou, all of you. All of you are the light of the world. And if we back translate that, if we take it back the other way, it would come out as this. Yous are the light of the world. You see, you don't have to do this on your own. Sometimes it's hard being the light of the world, but we've got your back. If you're finding it tough being the light of the world, there's people who pray for you. There's people to talk to. There's people to support you. And there's people to refer to. If you watch Jocelyn and me for a while, you'll see these conversations going over. Look, I know this person who needs a bit of help. Do you know anybody who, or have we got any such and such that we can help them? Because Jocelyn and I both understand very well that we do this as a body, not as an individual, all right? And when I go out, one nearly 70-year-old little scrawny Englishman into this community, I've got people praying for me. And I've got money in my pocket that people have given me to help people. And there's food in the cupboard that I've got a key and I can get it. There are people I know. I know a counselor. I know pastors. I can probably manage to scrounge some firewood if I need it. So all of these things are because we're part of a body. Because it's us collectively. Tato, tato e. We're the ones. We know we've got weaknesses. We know that we have people who can help us cover them. You might know that if you're forgetful, you make promises and you forget to keep them, you need to be in the body. So somebody can say, hey, remember? You see, and people start to cover and they start to disciple us. There's a word in English, and there we are, use of the light of the world. There's a word in English, it's called synergy. Now, synergy means that when you put things together, the result is more than they could ever have been if they were apart. It means if there's synergy with Janet and me, it means that Janet and I can achieve more being married and living together and working together than we could have achieved if we'd gone through life as single people. You could think about that. But synergy means we've got more to offer if we all get together than if we were apart. In fact, there's a word, team, and they say that team means together everyone achieves more. It's a bit corny, but there you are. Everyone has something to bring. And there's a famous proverb that you know it, a whakatauki, and it says this, Nā uterauru, which means with your basket, Nā kuterauru, with my basket, Ka ora ai te iwi, which means the people will do well, they'll thrive. Now, of course, the Māori proverb is talking about that rauru, which is a flax basket of food. And it means literally, if you bring the food you've got and I bring the food I've got, we'll do well. So somebody says, oh, I've got some sausages. Oh, I've got some tomato sauce. Oh, I've got a barbecue. I've got some bread. Has anyone got a gas bottle? You see, we get together, don't we? Tato, tato. And it's not just food, is it? Because somebody says, well, I've got a lawnmower and an empty fuel can. Someone else says, I've got 20 bucks. And somebody else says, I've got a big teenager with lots of muscles and nothing to do. So what happens is we go together and we can do more than we could ever do apart. Those are just little pictures. Yous are the light of the world. What's light? Well, the Greek word phos means light or the source of light or radiance. Are we a source of light? Well, not exactly. You see, Peggy Lee sang a song and it goes like this. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. We know she's right, but we know there's more to it than that. Because you see, the sun is the source of light and the source of energy for our entire solar system. And the moon is just a dead rock. Why does the moon light up the night? Because it reflects the light of the sun. And it's like that with us, isn't it? We are the light of the world, but our job is to reflect the light from the source, and the source is Jesus. You can say we reflect it. You could say we shine the light from Jesus who's within us, but we know that we are not the source, but it doesn't mean we can't be some use. We often use the word light to mean more than literal light, don't we? In fact, we have a word, and the word is enlighten. You've heard that word? So somebody says something, and said, do you know that it takes 150 tons of coal to make a wind turbine? And the other person says, no, I didn't know that. Thank you for enlightening me. We'd better keep on digging coal if we want to make wind turbines. See, that's enlightenment, isn't it? And in the Maori language, this is the way it comes out. Ko koutou te whakamārama o te ao. Now, marama is light. And this word, whakamarama, if I translated it myself, I'd say it means you are all the bringer of light. You're not the source. I think this is better in Māori than English. You are the bringer of light. And if I look in the dictionary, it says I'm not too far off. The whakamarama means to explain things, to clarify them, and to illuminate them. So in the Māori translation, Jesus says, you're the one who explains things. You're the one who helps people to understand, or you're the ones. You're the body that illuminates and brings God's light to the world. When we're in class, the teacher might explain something new, and then she gets to the end, and she says, marama, which means, do you get it? Do you understand? Have you heard that? And she says, marama, and we all say, aye, or we say, kaw, and then she knows she has to teach us again. All right? You got that? Marama? All right. So what does that mean to us, the light of the world? It's not literal light. Don't drive without headlights. But it says this. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Remember, it's the Lord's light we're showing. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. You see, if I was doing a sermon series here, I could do a message on goodness this week, couldn't I? Righteousness the next week and truth the next. But I'm going to pick one, and this one is truth, because this is very personal to me. When I was in my 20s, I stayed on a kibbutz in Israel, and an old man there called Shmuel said, do you know your name is Hebrew? Yes, I do. Do you know what it means? I said, no, I don't. He says, your name is Yirmiyahu, and it means the teller of God's truth. It has within it a part of the name of God. So I thought, well, that's interesting, isn't it? But for the next couple of years, or longer, that went around in my head a bit until finally it dawned. Okay, if that's what my name is, I'd better do it, hadn't I? And so if you look at what I'd done with my life, a big part of it has been a great desire to try and tell the truth. And I find that, in fact, the truth does set us free. Now, the truth can be challenging. You know that. It can be inconvenient, an inconvenient truth. It can be sad, and I'm sure that lots of you I've annoyed. There is a saying, in fact, the truth always hurts. Well, that's rubbish. The truth hurt Paul because he was always pushing against it. And the truth will hurt you, too, if you're always resisting it. But if you go with it, if you accept the truth, and Jesus said he's the truth, if you accept it, it doesn't hurt at all. In fact, it brings freedom and peace. If you go to St. Anthony's School, their motto is, fear not the truth. And so what they say at St. Anthony's is, you don't have to be afraid of the truth. It won't hurt you so long as you believe it and go with it. And at Huntly College, their motto is, Mā te pono ka wātea, the truth shall set you free. Isn't that a wonderful motto for a school, a straight school? And that comes directly from John chapter 8, where Jesus says it himself, then you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And that's today's theme. When my daughter Hannah was a little girl, she was in her cot, and she said, Daddy, turn on the light. So I turned on the light. And she says, turn on the dark. But the thing is, you can't turn on the dark, and you can't turn off the dark. There's no such thing as dark in a sense. Darkness is nothing. Light is something. Light has energy. You can measure it. It's got particles. It's got waves. It brings life to everything. Plants use it to make our food. And in fact, we can even get solar panels and use light, not heat, light to make electric power. Light is a thing. But darkness isn't. It's just a place where there's no light. That's all it is. So you can't turn the dark on and you can't turn the dark off. I want you to imagine that we were all in an environment of inky blackness. We couldn't see a thing. A bit like a modern church auditorium on Tuesday. All right? It's absolutely dark, absolutely black, and we can't see a thing. And we don't know what to do. This is a made-up story because you'd all have cell phones, but this is a made-up story. So, somebody says, well, I've got a match. And they light the match. Now, the match does not show us everything in the auditorium. It doesn't make us everything clear, but it makes something clear. By the light of this simple match in a big room, we can see a lot of things. We can see where we are. We can see the way out. We can see who's there. Someone can find us. So that tiny match in a great big black room achieves a lot. And that's why we have a proverb that was very popular when I was a bit younger. And the proverb said this: it is better to light one small candle than to curse the darkness. You've heard that, haven't you? You've never heard that. All right, then you've heard this. This is a song we used to sing. Jesus bids us shine with a pure, clear light, like a little candle burning in the night. In this world is darkness, so we must shine. You in your small corner, and I in mine. Probably more scriptural to say, yous in your small corners. Okay? Now, you can't turn off the darkness. You can only turn on the light. If we go back to the time when early Christians were around, in the Roman society, people didn't always want babies. So they had a way of dealing with it. If you had a baby you didn't want, which was usually a girl, you'd just take the baby out into the forest, leave the baby in the forest, and come back home. The baby would die. That was a thing in Roman culture. I'm sure the early Christians would have loved to have changed it, and they did, but they couldn't in the short term. So what they did instead was this. They couldn't turn off the darkness, but the Christians went out into the forests, and they found the babies. And people learned that if they found a baby, to take the baby to the Christians. And that is the reason, ladies and gentlemen, why the early church had more girls than boys in it. A lot of the early church were people who had been rescued from the forest. You cannot turn off the darkness. You can only turn on the light. Our culture has declared a war on babies. In our little country, New Zealand, last year, 14,000 babies were killed in their mother's womb before they were even born. That's 1 in 5 of known pregnancies. We can't change the law to protect those babies. We tried. We really tried. But when the law was passed that removed the last of the protections from the unborn child, we were faced with the situation. We can't change the darkness. We can only bring some light in. Some of you will remember, I know Anna will, the story I told of Sir William Lyley, who came into our teachers' training college. We were learning to be teachers, and he was a famous lecturer coming in to tell us about prenatal development, how the baby grows before the baby is born. Wonderful, wonderful speaker, beautiful pictures. This is in the early days of things like scans and so on. And this man spoke with such love of these beautiful little babies growing in the womb. And as he did, I could sense the anger building in the room, because the feminists in that room had spent years and years trying to tell us that unborn children are just little blobs of jelly with no feelings and no value. And here was this man making no attempt to argue with them, but just unfolding the wonders of new life on the screen and in front of us. And so we turn on the light. I was a school teacher in a state school, and I borrowed some models, life-size models of the little children growing in the womb, the babies at different stages and so on. I took them to youth group too. You might remember that, Aaron. And so children got used to actually holding these wonderful little babies and seeing how they grew. Anybody who comes to this church, we celebrate babies. People having a baby, we get excited. When they have a baby, we get excited. If mums are having a hard time, we help them out. We give help and advice. And although it's not my main theme, I should say, when women are sorrowing because they realize they've been sucked in and had these abortions, we help those mums too. We want to love everybody. We can't turn off anxiety and depression, but we can help people enjoy good food, good company, exercise, good breathing, interesting activities, and financial freedom. And we can help people to find a sense of purpose, which was a whole theme of Aaron's sermon. We can't turn off guilt, but we can speak the truth. It wasn't your fault your parents broke up. It wasn't your fault your mother died. And if it was someone's fault, we can speak forgiveness. Yes, That is true. It was your fault. But the Bible says if we confess our sins, which you have just done, then the Lord is merciful and just to forgive our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. When somebody comes to you and confesses a sin, you have the right to speak forgiveness in Jesus' name because they've just confessed it to you. We can't turn off hopelessness, but we can sow hope. There was a march that made the headlines last week, a big march. A lot of children left school and they got in this march. And the march was all about climate change. And one child said, or one teenager said, we're going to literally die. You see, that's the lie. Now, one of the problems with the climate change movement is that they say we can't convince older people. We can't convince older people that this is an emergency. And I'm going to tell you now, especially you younger ones, why that is. You see, here's why. In my lifetime, in the 1960s, we were told that nuclear war was imminent, that we'd be wiped out by atomic bombs, and if some of us lived through it, not only the radiation, but something called the nuclear winter would wipe out life on Earth. It would be simply too cold for anything to grow, and apart from some rich people in underground bunkers eating canned food, we'd all die. That was the 1960s. In the 1970s, we were warned of the coming ice age. Kenneth Watt said this, "The world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age." Janet went to high school at that time, and she had a teacher, a bit like Greta Thunberg's teacher, who put the scares in the kids. Janet was frightened at the coming ice age, as the teachers intended. Did the ice age come? It didn't come, did it? It didn't happen. In 1980s, my brother Anthony had a friend who was a scientist, and the scientist said to him, this new disease that's out, AIDS, will kill us all. The whole human race will be wiped out by this disease, AIDS. There's nothing we can do to stop it. He was a scientist, and he wasn't talking nonsense. He was considered in his opinions. That's what he said. Did AIDS kill us all? In the 1990s, it was the millennium bug. You remember that, you older ones? The millennium bug. What's going to happen is that as the world enters the year 2000, all the computers will fail. So much of our life is controlled. So the big cities, the water will fail. The sewerage will stop pumping. The trains will stop running. The electricity won't be produced anymore. And we'll be in a terrible way. And this millennium bug will basically wipe out civilization. Did it happen? In the 2000s, it was global warming. Listen to this. This was said in 2004. Climate change over the next 20 years could result in a global catastrophe costing millions of lives in wars and natural disasters. A secret report, suppressed by US defense chiefs and obtained by The Observer, warns that major European cities will be sunk beneath rising seas as Britain is plunged into a Siberian climate by 2020. Nuclear conflict, mega droughts, famine, and widespread rioting will erupt across the world by 2020. Did it happen? See this? It's happening. Some of those things are happening. But let's say the first one, right? The major cities of Europe will go underwater. The sea level has risen at a steady rate for hundreds of years. In the 1970s, when the world was very cold, it continued to rise at the same rate. In the 1990s, when the world was so hot that the polar ice caps melted on Mars, I'm not making this up, the sea level rise didn't accelerate at all. Old people remember this quote from H.L. Mencken. The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed by an endless series of hobgoblins, most of them imaginary. We sow hope. Old people, maybe that's one thing we could bring in our roro, the knowledge that politicians like to scare us, scientists tend to agree with the people who pay them, and that there's always a reason to be scared. And people, especially young people, are scared. The mental health of our teenagers is a mess. And no wonder they're a mess with what they're being fed. But Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. We'll survive the climate. The truth is powerful. in the court, in the tenancy tribunal, in family group conference, in tense situations between cultures. Truth can change things in a moment, and I've seen it happen time after time. When people come to Christ and they start getting serious about following God, one of the things that comes to them, and honestly, I don't raise the issue, they do, God talks to them, is, I think I need to tell the truth to winds. Now, that's scary. That's scary to tell the truth to winds and go and say, look, I haven't been entirely honest with you. There's a cost. You might have to pay some stuff back. I pray with people before we go in, you know, they get nervous. One lady said to me not long ago, she said, I've hardly slept for a week because she'd made up her mind. She's going in on this day to tell the truth to winds. And I went with her. But what freedom there is in living openly and honestly. One local man said to me, I'm sick of looking over my shoulder all the time. I'm going to tell the truth to winds. The issues of our day, same-sex attraction, gender issues, race issues, the truth sets us free, and harassed and helpless people find peace and freedom. I've studied a lot of truth on all those issues, and you're welcome to ask me, but if I shared any more now, it would kind of derail the theme of this sermon. But I'd be happy to talk about any of them. There's another verse of that song I sang. It goes like this. Jesus bids us shine, then for all around, many kinds of darkness in the world are found, sin and want and sorrow, so we must shine. You in your small corner and I in mine. You know, today I didn't even talk about sin or want, which is poverty, or sorrow. But whatever the kind of darkness, Jesus bids us shine. Let's let God have the last word. This is from Ephesians chapter 5. And it's from something called the Berean literal translation, which means sometimes the English grammar isn't quite right. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, discerning what is well-pleasing to the Lord. And do not have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even expose them. For it is shameful even to mention the things being done by them in secret. But everything being exposed by the light is made visible. For everything becoming visible is light. Therefore it says, awake, you, the one sleeping, and rise up out from the dead, and Christ will shine upon you. Therefore, carefully take heed how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Because of this, do not be foolish, but understand what is the Lord's will, and not to be drunk with wine, in which is debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit, speaking to each other in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks at all times for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to the God and Father. I know I'd said I'd let God have the last word, but I've had a thought which I'll share. We look carefully at what's meant by yous, and by light, but we didn't talk about the world. Jesus says, yous are the light of the world. And let that just remind us that this light we shine and share is not just for the church. If you read the Bible, you will find that the world means the world, the people out there. So let's, as we go on our way this week, remember that we're the light, not to ourselves primarily, but to the town, to the people we meet, to the people at work, in school, and wherever you are in the shops, be the light of Jesus. God bless you all.
Thanks for listening to the Huntley Baptist Church podcast. We hope that it has been an encouragement to you. Please feel free to contact us at huntleybaptist@extra.co.nz or visit us at huntleybaptist.com.